What's up, Ghoul Kids? Welcome back to another episode of the Ghoulish Gallery with your hosts, Tasha, me, and Journey, who has finally calmed down from the disaster of a storm day we've had. And each week, I have a guest from a different location here to tell us about their local spooks, haunted places, cryptids, urban legends, all the things we love. And this week, we are going to be talking about Salem, Massachusetts. And we have horror author Michael slash Mike Clark. Thank you for coming on, and I appreciate your patience with how long it took me to get you on.
My pleasure. Glad you're here.
When did you start writing? Like, how long has that kind of been like a creative thing for you or outlet?
It was always kind of a dream, but I started very late. I'm 56 now, and I think I started at like 52 or something. And just for like, I don't know, I'm kind of the guy that will watch a movie and I didn't like it because of this, didn't like it because of that. And I even had one of my nephews say, like, why don't you like anything? And I'm like, oh God, I'm turning into that guy. So like, you know, what the heck? I'm gonna write something and write what I'd like to see. So I wrote a trilogy. It's called The Patience of a Dead Man. And then I just recently finished a fourth book, which is unrelated to The Patience of a Dead Man. It's called Hell on High, and that's coming out in April from Bridget's Gate Press. That's got a little bit of supernatural in it as well, with a foothold in reality. I tried to make it seem like it could be plausible and happen, you know, to a normal person. And so I started writing pretty late in life, and just goes to show you, you know, never quit.
Ain't that the truth? And I see that a lot. Like, you know, there's some people, I mean, the horror community is such a diverse place. You see some people that have been writing their entire lives, and then people that kind of hop into it later on and just run with it. And you just, when the time's right, the time's right.
Yeah, I think Al Makatsu got a late start. I don't know. She's one that comes to mind right away, but yeah, she's very successful and an inspiration.
You guys will have to send me an ARC when that gets ready to come out, and I'll do a, because I do reviews and author interviews on my site.
Oh, yeah.
So I would be glad to do one of those.
Absolutely.
What better way to make sure the plot goes the way you want it to than to be the one to write it? It doesn't get much better than that.
And then put up or shut up too. Like, aha!
Since you don't like it, what would you do instead?
Yeah, well, yeah. Exactly.
Here you go.
Yep, exactly.
So in terms of like spooky things, is that something that's always fascinated you?
Yeah, I've always had I love that that eerie, chilling feeling. And I don't think there's enough of it in movies. Like, you know, it comes along every once in a while, and not everybody does it correctly. Like, there's a lot of jump scares, that kind of thing. But I'm not into that. I'm into like I think one of the scariest movies was The Sixth Sense.
Mm.
Like, a little girl in the tent, you know, just is,
yes,
like, all was going to happen. You know, yeah, I had chills going up and down my body.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was The Others, which kind of copied The Sixth Sense a little bit. The Changeling, the old one from the 70s with George C. Scott, was chilling, where the, you know, there's a ghost in the house. I don't know if you saw that one, but and I don't want to spoil it. It's called The Changeling, and it's not the one with Angelina Jolie. It's got George C. Scott, and he buys a house that is haunted by a little boy. And he bought this giant mansion. He's a pianist, and he's trying to sleep, he's trying to play and whatever, and he keeps getting these noises and stuff, and he looks into it, and I guess I'll give away one part, so a little spoiler, it's not the whole story, but he finds a little ball, you know, like a child's ball, and he realizes that it shouldn't be there, so he goes and he takes it in his car, he drives, he throws it in the river, he gets back home. And then he opens the door and it's bouncing down the stairs at him. So that kind of thing I love, you know, that kind of chilling.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting hurt, but it's scary as hell. And you're alone, you know,
I think they had that scene, 'cause I watched the Shudder's 101 scariest
Yeah.
horror movie. I think that was in there, wasn't it?
I believe it was.
Okay,
Yeah.
that's probably why that sounds familiar. I already had my list of movies I needed to watch, and then I went through and watched that series, and my list like doubled because of all these ones that I added to
Yeah.
it. So I was kind of afraid to watch it because I didn't want there to be, a bunch of spoilers for movies I hadn't seen yet, but I think they did a good job of mostly
Yeah, this happens
spoiling
kind of like
them.
when he's realizing that, he's got something here. It's not the it's not going to spoil the plot at all. It just kind of
Yeah.
tells you what he's up against.
Oof.
So,
Yeah, that stuff is always ugh. It's
and some of
just
these, like, there's different horror things. There's slashers. There's this. There's that. And some of them are even funny. Some of them are so, like, Friday the 13th could be funny if you look at it. It's kind of campy,
Yeah.
And I like that, but I really enjoy it when somebody scares me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's now that I've watched at this point in my life that I've seen so much more horror than I had like even a year ago at this time. I definitely have seen like where my tastes have changed and how I view things differently when it comes to movies. So I'm super jumpy. Jump scares always get me. They usually make me laugh afterwards. But I definitely have a bigger appreciation for the horror that just kind of gets under your skin and sticks with you. And I feel like stuff like that, where it's easy to imagine yourself standing at the bottom of your own stairs and, seeing this ball come bouncing at you, for example, like
Yeah.
stuff that just is really
You know,
easy
you
to
just threw it in
imagine.
the river.
Yeah.
So.
It's kind of like that joke where you hear about, the guy who hates his mother-in-law and she threw away her copy of The Exorcist because it scared her. So he went and got it and soaked it in water and put it back in her nightstand drawer. I feel like that meme always pops around Halloween, makes it come back. But yeah, just stuff like that just sticks around and you find yourself thinking about it at random times. So you said you lived in Salem for 2 years?
Yeah, I lived in Salem back in 2001, 2002, and now I live about 40 minutes away from Salem. So yeah,
That's
I
amazing.
sometimes I pop by, and we'll get into it a little bit. But one of the things that's happened is, like, there's a place in Salem, it's called Gallows Hill, and I always used to drive by it and think, wow, that's where it all happened. 19 people were hanged and everything. But in 2016, they did some kind of a study, and like a forensic study, and they found out that it wasn't there. It was half a mile away.
Oh
I'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah, but so that was 2016. So since then, they put up a memorial there and everything, and I've
no.
driven. Now I know exactly where it happened, and it's
Yeah.
a very big hill. So I don't know, that kind of stuff. Like, anytime there's a, I don't know, a place where something terrible happened, that kind of freaks me out too. Like, I've been to a bunch of places. I went to Dallas, Texas, where Kennedy got shot, and just to be there is creepy.
Yeah.
I went to New York City, not to go see the World Trade Center thing, but like, it was early 2002, like January, February. So the buildings were still up around there, and like, you could see scars in the buildings
Oh,
where
wow.
pieces of building or plane hit it or something. Just scary stuff like that. And I don't know, this gallows, not Gallows Hill, it's called Proctor's Ledge, but this had that same kind of feel where, there were 19 people up there. It was kind of creepy.
Yeah, to kind of look at the ground at your feet and be like, oh man, like they were standing here at one point.
Yeah. It's actually like you're at the bottom of this, it's like naked rock. It's a ledge, you have to look up it, so you're kind of like, that makes it even creepier to me, because it's almost like you'd be looking up and they'd be hanging from the trees above your head, so that, I don't know, just adds to it. Poor
Yeah.
people, weren't witches.
I
But
did see an article that popped up around Halloween, and I had never thought of it from that perspective, but I kind of understand now. Like they made the comment, or the headline was something along the lines of like Salem residents, being fed up with Salem being treated like Disneyland every time Halloween rolls around. And we have, I'm not too far from Dollywood. So, you know, summer rolls around and the holidays roll around and everything is a million times harder to get around with the tourists. And I'm not even in the thick of it. So I can only imagine what it's like trying to just get to work and back living in Salem when it gets to that time of year and there are people just everywhere.
Well, Salem is like 20 minutes from a highway to begin with. It's like New England streets. So there, it used to be an old town, and it's on a, like a harbor, and they built all the highways after, and you've got to go through, through Salem on all, traffic light, left, right, blah, 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 go through Peabody, same thing, and then 20 minutes later you get the highway. So it's hard to get to, and never mind with, however many people visit, and beginning on October 1st, and it turns into a traffic jam, like you said.
Ugh, I can't even. That would drive me insane. Like
And
at
it's really
first.
just the downtown part too, like the little, the old town thing.
Yeah,
But
I when I first got here, I was like, oh, it's so exciting. Like there's all these fun touristy things. And now I'm like, okay, what month is it? Is there anybody that's on vacation? Are there any school breaks? When is it safe to go?
yeah. How
And
far away are you?
probably depending on which route you take, probably about 40 minutes to an hour from like Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, all that stuff. So yeah, the holidays especially, the interstate backs up sometimes for miles just with tourists getting off at the exit that they need to take for Gatlinburg and everything. All the wrecks because people aren't paying attention. I'm a dispatcher for law enforcement, so the more people that are traveling, the more phone calls we get with complaints just about other drivers on the road, and it's usually just a disaster all the way around. So
You get it at work, and you get it when you go out to run your errands.
yeah, any huge influx of people seems to affect things almost 24/7 around here, so
Right.
I can definitely understand why they would be why it would get so annoying, especially somewhere like Salem with that kind of attraction.
Yep. And it's
No.
year round too, but October, forget it.
Yeah, I can. I would like to visit at some point, but I won't be going during the month of October or probably even November, just to be on the safe side. I'll go in like May.
Yeah, you'll see what you need to see there. All the historic stuff is always, it's always going to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, when you first moved there, were you kind of out and about, like trying to see everything that you could see, or
No, I kind of just treated it as like, I live here
heading
now.
there?
And honestly, like preparing for this show, like now that I've looked at a bunch of things that I never looked at before, I'm kind of like, oh, wow. But I have seen the lay of the land. I do know, I've seen the attractions. I haven't toured them all, but now I've done some research on them. I know a lot of the stories. I know which ones I'd like to see, which ones that don't sound as
Appealing.
enticing. Yeah, but like what I did was I found a just to brush up. I went to SalemGhosts.com, and they have a top 10 most haunted places in Salem, Massachusetts. So, it's I like little countdown lists, and these must be the top 10 most haunted places. So then I individually on another website called Ghost City Tours did research on each one of these 10 individually, and being able to like being having seen the buildings and to know how far apart they are from each other, and then to learn about them individually. I'll share a lot of that tonight. And there's a lot of familiar names that keep repeating too. Like a lot of these places are supposedly haunted by the same ghost. So
Oh, making the rounds.
Yeah, exactly. Like the, a lot of these end with like, oh, who haunts this? It's so haunted. Who haunts it? And they're like, well, it could be this and it could be that. Yeah, so don't start telling them, I suppose.
Plot twist, like the hauntings are more spaced out during October when the ghosts have to get through the traffic jams too.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not scaring anybody away, that's for sure.
Right?
So do you want me to go through this list, or
Yeah,
do you
sure.
want...
Let's hack into it.
All right. Well, according to, I don't agree, like having read the synopsis or synopses or whatever it is, like when you get to two and one, I was kind of like, really? Some of these sounded better than they should have been in a different order. So I'm just going to take it at their order.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll decide together whether we agree with it. But the first one is called it's a place called Mercy Tavern. That's what it's called today. And it used to be a brothel. And there's a little there's like an old town kind of, and it's called the Derby Street Historic District. If Salem was a shipping city, and there's a wharf there and a bay where the boats used to come in with whatever spices and everything they got from other countries, and anyway, this old town was also is full of sailors and that kind of thing. And what was happening here was another thing that's in the old town is there's tunnels underneath a lot of the buildings, and they were built there by Elias Derby Jr. It's Derby Street, and it's the Derby Street Historic District. So it was named after his dad, Elias Derby Sr. But Elias Derby Jr. dug these tunnels underneath, and they used to not only smuggle things, but rumor is that there was part of the Underground Railroad, and they would also like the gentlemen of the night would sneak through there and go to the brothels. And this Mercy Tavern used to be a brothel. And what haunts the Mercy Tavern are sailors who were kidnapped. And the reason that they were kidnapped is because everybody was shorthanded with sailors, and they would be kidnapped and thrown on a boat. And then guess what? You're working for that guy.
Shanghai.
So that was part of the article. They were shaken. Yep. And this happened way after the witch trial, so it has nothing to do with witches or fake innocent people that were hanged. So people, according to this, they hear voices in tunnels, and they sometimes see ghostly sailors. I never knew there were tunnels, though. Like, I'd love to, get down in some of them and
I feel like tunnels are one of those things that are just inherently creepy anyways.
sure.
Even if it's like a bike path in a park and you have to go through a tunnel or the road cuts
Yeah.
through or whatever, like it just the way things echo and everything else,
It
it
looks
just
like
makes
a
me feel
trap.
creepy. Yeah, it does. Like, what's gonna happen while I'm in here because my
Yeah.
options are limited.
Exactly. And I don't know. I don't know who the hell dug them too. I mean, how big could they be? They're gonna be kind of claustrophobic.
Narrow.
That bugs the hell out of me.
I've heard people were tended to be a lot shorter back then too, so it's not like they
Yeah.
would need as much space to kind of get through things and
Right.
yeah, no.
Be worse for us. Now, 11 minutes walk away from the Mercy Tavern is a place called, nowadays it's called Wicked Good Books. And Wicked Good is a New England saying. It means like, really cool. And wicked fits with it's like a double entendre for Salem, obviously.
True that.
Which is but Wicked Good Books has these tunnels underneath it too. What is said to happen at Wicked Good Books is that there are cold spots. Some people see apparitions. There are orbs, like floating orbs, voices and footsteps, books fly off shelves, and batteries drain from cell phones and such. Again, so it's like it's just down the street.
The good old energy drain when there's a ghost around.
Yeah, which sounds kind of, I don't know, benign to me, but
Oh, definitely.
this was one of the ones I was kind of like, really? Just voices? I don't know. I mean, I'd probably scare the hell out of me if I really heard it,
Right.
but
Like, I consider it a minor occurrence in the grand scheme of things, but at the same time, I would still piss myself.
Yes. The next one is the Hawthorne Hotel, and this is one that kind of like didn't have a punchline for me as far as what's haunting it. But it's named after Nathaniel Hawthorne, who was born in Salem. And he's a famous author. He wrote The Scarlet Letter and The
Yeah.
House of Seven
Okay.
Gables. This Hawthorne Hotel was like more modern day stuff. They filmed an episode of Bewitched in there from the 70s TV series.
Oh, nice.
And then even more recently, the movie Joy, which had Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro in it, that was filmed there too. What happened there was a series of fires. It burned down once or twice. And then they skipped to, all right, well, room 325 and 612 are haunted. You can feel a hand grab the sheet from you or something. And then there's a ghostly woman looking in the mirror. Now, why? Because of a couple of fires? I don't know, but that's the wrap on the Hawthorne Hotel.
Ugh, I just, if I'm sleeping, leave me alone, please.
Yeah, it's rude. I paid good money.
Any scene in a movie where, because I mean, your bed is supposed to be like a safe space. So, when they show, disturbances in the covers and the blankets and stuff like that, that's one of those things that always gives me chills because I'm like, no, leave me alone while I'm here. Just don't.
Yeah, and this is a obviously a step up from your battery draining on your phone. Like
Yeah.
sheet gets pulled off me or somebody grabs my arm and I'm in bed and they shouldn't be, then
Oof.
yeah, I might be out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be cause for concern real quick.
Right. And then so we're up to number seven, and there was a place called the Lyceum, which is now a place, it's a seafood restaurant called Turner's Seafood. And it was also the place of an apple orchard that was owned by Bridget Bishop, and she was the first person executed in the Salem witch trials. And she was arrested for bewitching pigs and possessing poppets, which were puppets. And she was three times married, and I think she was kind of singled out because she was, not a traditional wife or something. People are said to smell apples, doors close and open, and sometimes some people see Bridget herself,
I'm
which
sure there's
sounds.
probably information on it somewhere, but I would love to know what constitutes normal pig behavior versus bewitched pig behavior.
I know. Do
That's where
they
I'm like,
create a
how?
table and it's a knife
Right?
and a fork?
Did they
I
plop down and have a conversation with you?
don't
Like,
know.
what gave you concern regarding your pigs? That
Exactly.
is, I'm gonna have to put that on my list. That's something I need to see if I can find now, is if they have any
Bridget
reports of
Bishop.
what was so bizarre.
Exactly. It was all hooey, wasn't it?
Ugh,
None
it
of it.
just. It is crazy. But then, even nowadays, like you see some of the things that people do and how they react to something. That's like we really haven't made any progress sometimes.
No, exactly. I agree. It's
Crazy.
not too far from this.
Right?
Yeah.
We're slightly more civilized, and that's about the extent of it.
Exactly, but
Sometimes.
yeah.
Sometimes. If you've ever been to a grocery store during a toilet paper shortage, you'll see just how uncivilized
Oh,
people
I think we all did that.
are. That's still like we still
Fresh
all
in
make
our
jokes.
minds.
The great toilet paper shortage of 2020.
Exactly. That was the first thing to go.
Priorities.
I had a guy like, I was still working and I was talking to like a customer of mine, and then he's like, yeah. Oh yeah, he had a big thing of toilet paper. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, oh, I'm just running out getting toilet paper, getting ready. And then, that was like the first thing I heard of the toilet paper shortage, and it was like a real life example of people hoarding toilet paper, and then it's on the all over the news. I'm like, oh my God, how many who, how do we all think the same? And the first thing we think of is toilet paper, or
Right?
I didn't, and I'm proud I didn't. But
Yeah.
yeah, I'd be afraid of food or something, I think.
Nope, that toilet paper, man.
number six is the old Salem Jail, which is now apartments. But it once held the Boston Strangler. He was in there.
Oh God.
No.
I would not be
Harry
renting.
Houdini did an escape from that from it. So he did one of his stunts there. And then there's a guy, this is a Salem witch trial personality. His name was Giles Corey. And he was accused of being a warlock. I think he, I'm not sure if he was the only man. So I think some men died in jail, but there were 19 that were hanged. And I don't know if he's included in the 19 because he wasn't hanged, but he was one of the people executed for, being a warlock. And what happened was he went to court and he's denying everything. And they wanted him to say, to start the court, you have to say, by God and my country. And he wouldn't say it. So what they did was they took him to this field at the time, which later became the old Salem Jail. And they laid him on the ground and they put a plank over him. And then they started putting stones on top of the plank and till he died. So he was pressed to death. And I've been to the Salem, there's a Salem, I think it's called this the Salem Witch Memorial. And it's basically a, it's right outside a cemetery. It's downtown. It's in the old area. And you can walk through it. It's made of granite. And it's got, it's not like gravestones, but it's carved into granite what happened to the 19 or 20 people that, were killed. And I saw his stone there. It says, Giles Corey pressed to death. And I'm thinking, oh my God. So that's
Well,
how he died. And he could be the one haunting the Salem jail. And what people say is lights flicker. Like it was when the jail was shut down, they cut the electricity to it, but they still saw lights flickering. They saw sh quote unquote shadow people, screams. And then there were also Confederate soldiers that were held there. And some say it was the ghosts of Confederate soldiers.
I'm not super claustrophobic unless I'm in a situation where I know I can't get out. Like if I one time I was on an elevator that broke down. So being stuck there and knowing that, you don't have anywhere to go would be rough. So just trying to imagine like being trapped underneath a board with all of this weight. I mean, you already like feel like there's kind of a weight on your chest when you start getting anxious about things.
Yeah.
So to have that physical there on top of that would just be, I mean, obviously there aren't many pleasant ways to die, but that just
No, the claustrophobia thing is high on, and when I was writing Hell on High, coming up, there were, it's about a woman that she ends up climbing Mount Everest, and one of the dangers of Mount Everest is avalanches. So I did a lot of like looking into avalanches, and I found an article. I can't say where I got it because I don't remember, but it was about this like a college student. I think she was in Germany or Switzerland or something, and she got caught in an avalanche, and she is under the snow. And I always wondered, is it dark? Is it light? And obviously you can't move. I mean, you're packed in the snow.
Oh, God.
She said she couldn't move and it was light under there. And then her cell phone starts ringing in her coat, but she can't get it. So, like, doesn't that give you that claustrophobia feeling right away, right
Oh,
there?
that is
Yeah,
atrocious.
exactly. And then eventually, like,
Ugh.
I guess something was sticking out of the snow. It was like a miracle they found her and they pulled her out. But she was so cold that, like, she had hypothermia. I didn't think she was. I don't can't remember if it was a coma or not, but she had to be revived, like in a warm bath and everything. Like you talk about claustrophobia, avalanche does it for me.
Oh yeah. I mean, like I said, I grew up in New York, so you spend all winter playing in the snow, and most everybody has like face planted in the snow at some point when you're sledding or whatever, and you get the snow like all in your face and can't breathe, and just that is terrifying. I mean, I don't like the cold and all that anyways, but I no,
I remember
avalanches would.
I was in grammar school. I was in New Hampshire, and the plow, makes a big pile of snow at the edge of the parking lot, and the grammar school, all the little kids are digging tunnels, and we're trying to kick through to the other side of the snowbank, and we're taking turns. So, but you got to get in this hole feet first, but your shoulders are pinned to your arms are pinned to your side, and I freaked out. I'll let, here I was, whatever I was, five, six, seven, eight, whatever I was. I think it was, I probably, I'm going to guess I was 7 years old. And I still remember it because that snow had me, and I had to dig it out and no, thank you.
Yeah, that is, especially as a kid when, piles of snow seem so much bigger.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would have been 7, I think, when we had the blizzard of 93 come through. And I just remember we got like some 3 feet of snow. So by
Wow.
the time, everything's been plowed and it falls off the roof and all this other stuff. I mean, you look at the piles of snow and you're like, oh, this will be great to go sledding on and everything else. But then, you find spots that aren't quite as packed down yet, and all of a sudden you're stuck. And
Yeah.
that was when I face planted and I got snow like all up my nose and everything. And I was like trying to breathe and couldn't and freaked
Yeah.
out. So, oh, an avalanche would like legit be.
It's millions of pounds too. I mean, it's just like,
Oh. Did you watch Cabinet of Curiosities on Netflix?
is that the Guillermo del Toro one?
Yeah.
No, I want to.
Oh my goodness.
Is there a claustrophobia one?
There's yeah, the second episode, it's still really good, and there are a lot of people who really liked it. And I thought it was good too, but the whole episode just stressed me out because it's basically like bodies that are being stolen out of graves through tunnels in the ground.
Oh wow.
So,
What's that?
it oof. Yeah, it
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I gotta write that down.
yeah,
Gotta write a reminder.
it is. I love the series as a whole. Most of the episodes I have watched again since then, but that one's getting a one watch because I can appreciate the horror of it because it did exactly what it was supposed to do and it made me super uncomfortable. But that is an uncomfortable that I just cannot bring myself
Yeah,
to
no,
to do
yeah, I
again.
understand. Yeah, one thing, like I think it was years ago, we all have our thing that just bugs us,
Oh, yeah.
and it was From Hell, and it was Anthony Perkins who was in Psycho, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was From Hell, and it was this movie, and he was like a drug addict. He would smoke. It was like a Jekyll and Hyde thing, and he would smoke this drug and turn into Mr. Hyde or something like Mr. Hyde. It's been years, but it bothered me so much that he was like the drug thing bugs the hell out of me. Like people that shoot heroin, that kind of thing. Like I've never done anything like that, but it
Yeah.
freaks me out. And Train Spotting, the movie Train Spotting. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't, but I've heard of it.
It's called a comedy by some, but it's like it's these people that are, addicted to heroin, and you watch them just go downhill and how desperate they get. And there's even a more terrible scene, like the most terrible scene. I won't get into it just in case somebody wants to be scared by a drug
Yeah.
movie. But yeah, that's my thing, the claustrophobia, and I'd say the drug thing. And
Well, and I feel like that's entirely reasonable because you never know how somebody's going to react. Like when all those stories were hitting the news from Florida, of course. Sorry, everybody who lives in Florida. The bath salts thing, where all of a sudden there were people like eating homeless people and like real
Paper?
life.
I didn't hear that.
No. Oh my
No.
gosh.
I heard
Yeah.
about bath salts, but I didn't know they're. Wow.
Oh, yeah, there was a guy who
They're
got
doing it
caught.
as a drug, right?
Since then, I think that was enough to steer most people away from it, because I really haven't heard much about it since then. But there was one guy specifically where he went and killed this homeless man, and like police show up and he's like eating this guy's face.
Oh my
So
God.
yeah, it's you don't know, everybody's body chemistry is different and you just don't know how people are going to react to things. So you could eat somebody's
God,
face
take me
off.
away. No thanks.
Yeah, right. And it kind of, obviously addiction is a very serious thing, but it kind of makes me laugh that, bath salts kind of disappeared or seemed to have disappeared from the forefront at that point, because like I feel like everybody has a line that they draw, and for most people, I feel comfortable knowing that they will not resort to cannibalism and have no interest in doing anything that could lead them to
Yeah,
cannibalism.
that's a
So,
good prerequisite. No cannibalism.
right, that's when you have to specifically put that on your list, you're in a rough spot.
Well, number five is my favorite on this list, and I touched on it a little bit here, but it's that Proctor's Ledge thing where they, for years, I lived in Salem in 2001, 2002. We thought that Gallows Hill was where everybody was hanged. And in 2016, they did a study and they found out that it's not at Gallows Hill. It's really literally you're driving down the street, there's a Walgreens on your right. It's behind the Walgreens. And yeah, it's like a patch of land behind the Walgreens. And it is city land. It's not very big. But there was a guy in 1921, I think his name, I can't even read my own handwriting here. Sidney Perley
I
said
understand
that no,
that.
it was here. It wasn't at Gallows Hill. It's called Proctor's Ledge. It was here, and just in case the city bought the land, and then like later on in 2016, they do this study where they compare the writings of the time. Like they said that the bodies were thrown off of a ledge into a crevice, and there is a rock ledge on this Proctor's. What's it called? Proctor's Ledge. And Gallows Hill doesn't have that, and it wouldn't have been visible from the water and Proctor's Ledges. So they figured out that this is the place. And it is just the most nondescript thing you could ever see because there's houses all around it. And then there's this damn Walgreens right there, too, which, if you try to take a picture, you might get a piece of the Walgreens in it.
That's so surreal.
I know. So then the city built like a memorial, and if anybody wants to Google it, I think it's called the Salem Witch Memorial. But anyway, it's Seven Pope Street. Probably just by Googling Seven Pope Street, Salem, Massachusetts, you'll get to see what it looks like. It looks modern and nondescript, but the hill rises behind it, the ledge, and I got a little feeling there, like a little twinge of. I'm in a weird place here that something terrible happened and people died. Another thing that they think happened was they left the bodies or they buried them in this little crevice or whatever. And then the families came by at night and took the bodies because it was illegal to touch a dead body, but they didn't want, they believed their relatives to be innocent and they wanted them to have a proper,
Proper burial.
burial. So nobody knows where they were really buried. They were, I don't, I think they, it turned out that they didn't find remains on Proctor's Ledge. Yeah, that's kind of cool to me because I lived there before it and happened after. I've visited it since, and that's where it really all happened. And some, according to this website, they say that there's a lady in white that is seen from time to time. There are voices, cold spots, just like every other one. There's all these little benign things. A lady in white would be pretty big, I think. To hear a voice, it could be somebody in one of the houses. And I'm telling you, it's a neighborhood.
Somebody
It's like
checking out at Walgreens.
a good Halloween trick-or-treat neighborhood back there.
My goodness.
So that was that one.
That's such a That's funny. And I mean, it kind of makes you wonder too, in some of these older, more historic cities, like what other, miscommunications or misunderstandings when it comes to historic things, like what kind of places have been built over? You hear about neighborhoods that, like the Poltergeist, where all of a sudden they find out, they've been built on ancient burial grounds and stuff like that. But like, makes you wonder how much that stuff
Oh, did
happened
you watch
here.
like Dahmer? Did you watch the Dahmer thing on Netflix?
Yes, I
Like
did.
they wrecked his apartment, and they
So good.
yeah, it was, I feel bad for the families, and but I think they addressed that pretty well. Like I'm sure if I were one of the family members, I wouldn't want to revisit the whole thing again. But I'd watched a bunch of things about Jeffrey Dahmer before that, and that was the best one, But yeah, like his apartment was wrecked, and I'm not sh exactly sure what is there now. But they were supposed to, they wanted to build a memorial, and they didn't. So, I mean,
I want
what?
to say, I think there was like a, did they do one of those like update things at the very end with like, I want to say they said it was still an empty lot.
Oh, okay. That part I don't remember, but I do remember they said they didn't build the
Trying to
memorial.
remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't
Which
want
is
to live
tough. Like, I mean that whole situation is just a whole thing all its own. But to kind of make some gesture would really have been nice on their behalf, considering everything that happened and how things went down. And
Well, they were so wrong. They just wanted to br brush it under the rug. They didn't,
yeah.
negligent, the
We
authority
don't
that.
want a reminder of this.
Yeah, exactly. We screwed up and we don't want an eternal reminder.
Government.
Yeah. Number
It's
four here is the House of the Seven Gables. It's a real place. Not only a novel by Nathaniel Hawthorne, but who lived there was John Hathorne. And he was one of the judges, or the judge, in 1692. He was the great grandfather of Nathaniel Hawthorne, who has a W in his name, Hathorne. And for whatever reason, Nathaniel thought if he changed his name by putting a W in there, he wouldn't be associated with the judge. But even in the book, there's an apology at the beginning of the book for the Salem witch trials. If you want, I'll read it. It's like a paragraph.
Yeah, sure.
Says, this is from the House of the Seven Gables. He, Judge Hathorne, made himself so conspicuous in the martyrdom of the witches that their blood may fairly be said to have left a stain upon him. I know not whether these ancestors of mine bethought themselves to repent, meaning his great grandfather, and ask pardon of heaven for their cruelties. At all events, I, the present writer, as their representative, hereby take shame upon myself for their sakes and pray that any curse incurred by them may be now and henceforth removed. So I thought that was kind of cool that he, not only is he a famous writer, but he's related to the guy that, said, hang him.
Yeah, man, I can't even imagine. Like, obviously, there's that recognition of, like, no, I'm not personally responsible for this, but you still kind of feel like you've been dragged into it through no fault of your own.
And he's gonna like revisit it by writing a novel, based on loosely based on things that happened around then. So I guess he had to say something because he's maybe he would have been called a hypocrite or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It sounds like he was a very self-aware person for that day and age. Like, I mean, obviously not that people couldn't be back then, but it sounded like a very modern take on an apology. Like that's absolutely like something you could hear these days.
Yeah, exactly. Sounds like a, well, not a trigger warning, but just like a, yeah, like, don't judge me, I guess, or
Yeah.
I'm sorry for what my family did.
Right. They may not have felt bad for it. I don't know, but I do on their behalf, if nothing else.
Yeah, exactly.
Very big of
As
a
far
house.
as the haunting of this place, the staff said that it's a museum, and the staff says it's not haunted, but some people say, the usual voices, a feeling of unease in the attic. See, I'd like to visit these places now. I read all this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man on this, there's a secret staircase. They've seen a man on the stairs, and there's a phantom boy, but there's no. Who would that boy be? There's no clue. Nobody has a theory as to who that could be. Why this haunts the House of Seven Gables? So.
Yeah, and of course, infant and child death was such a part of life back then. It may not even have been anything noteworthy to be able to pinpoint.
One of these coming up has a curse where. One guy lost five kids.
Oof.
But we're up to three. And that's the Burying Point Cemetery. And that judge, John Hathorne, is buried there. There's apparently been 400 years of ghostly accounts. Giles Corey, the guy that got crushed to death or pressed to death, his wife Mary,
Oh,
is
wow.
there. And they apparently see a lady in white. They're not sure who that is. Some people have said they see apparitions coming out of the ground.
Man, that lady in white really gets around because they're, I feel like that is one of the most common spooks, like nationwide. Everywhere has some story about that lady in white.
Like La Llorona.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's a lady in black too, but that's a movie, right?
Oh, yeah. Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe. Yeah, thank you.
Was a good
Good
one.
movie too.
Yeah, it was.
Little fast fact about that was I heard that, like, I read an article that the author, which I can't remember her name, she wrote the book. It was a $100 million movie, or cost like. Or made 100 million. I can't remember what. Anyway,
Oh.
she had to declare bankruptcy. The movie companies, they kind of screw the writers, and
Ugh.
that's called Hollywood accounting, where they say you get 1% or whatever, but then they just make sure 1% of the profits, and then they make sure there's no profits. So beware, any writers listening,
That's
if you get.
just, it's, I feel like, well, I mean, I'm kind of biased because I write. I like writing. Pretty much 95% of the people I know at this point are writers. And I mean, where does your movie come from if somebody doesn't write it? Where does anything come from if it's not written somewhere when
Well,
it's
how
supposed to
about
be entertainment?
Paul Tremblay and The Knock at the Cabin? Do you know about that?
I've only seen bits and pieces that it's supposed to be based on the book that he wrote,
Cabin at the End of the World.
and
And
they're not giving him credit for it.
his name's not on the poster, that kind of thing. I mean, and it says like written by M. Night Shyamalan. So I don't know. He said a thing or two, like he calls it the knock at the cabin at the end of the world. Like I've seen him sign something,
Yeah.
to one of his super fans. I don't think he's mad. I'm sure he's, I don't want to speak for him at all.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of sad that he doesn't get all the credit for the writing, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that like
That
even Jaws, which was changed a lot by Steven Spielberg. Like the ending is different and they change things that happen to the characters. I don't know if you ever read that book, Jaws.
I haven't read the book, no.
Well, I won't spoil it if you ever do, but there's two, three major differences from the maybe more than from the movie. And they changed it because they had to, because of filming, conditions or whatever, or just because they were writing the script as they were filming. And even then, I think Peter Benchley got credit,
Yeah.
says on the
Well, it's
poster.
like, and excuse me, sorry, I'm coming off the flu, so I'm still The Mist is one of my favorites, just with how well they tackle human psychology and human behavior in that movie. But it's a totally different ending from what Stephen King had, but
I
he's
need to
still.
refresh my memory on that one.
So that one, I think it's on Netflix now, but it's in Maine, of course, and there's a nearby military base that's been doing, these top secret experiments. And this guy's at a grocery store with his son, and all of a sudden, like this huge bank of mist that nobody can see through rolls in, and it turns out there's a whole lot of critters in there that aren't normal. And I can't remember exactly what they said his ending is, because I think his was actually a novella or a short story. It wasn't even like a full length story. But I guess he's come out at some point and said that he actually likes the ending that they went with a lot better than the one that he chose. But of course
Really?
they're gonna give Stephen King credit for everything that they adapt of his. But it is sad when somebody has poured so much time and effort and creative energy into something and don't always get the credit that's due to them for
I mean, if you
that.
become an AIM, you're all set. But if you're, I don't know, you get your one shot or something and they don't tag you on there, I don't know. Time will tell, I suppose, for all of us.
Yeah, true that. All right, what are we up to?
We're up to two.
Dun dun
And
dun.
Salem Witch House. And this is, I think I told you at the beginning that number two and number one were, kind of anticlimactic for me, especially after the Proctor's Ledge, where it really all happened, and
Yeah.
maybe so haunted or something, but it certainly was eerie. I can tell you that firsthand. But the pre-trial judge, his name was Jonathan Corwin, and he lived there. And there was a Corwin curse. This is the guy that had five of his kids die. One of them in childbirth, and one of them was 19, died early. And people don't know if it was, if the ghosts, they hear voices and get chills, big whoop after we've heard, of Women in White and Bridget's, apple orchard and all that stuff, all the good stuff. They don't know if it was the Corwin curse, which is the dead kids, or the actual innocent people that were hanged in the Salem witch trial. So that's number two, which I thought was anticlimactic. And then number one is the Joshua Ward House, which is, it's all, these are all like really close together, down in the old part of Salem. Somebody apparently chokes you in this one. Like you can feel a hand on your neck and then you feel it squeak. It's also like, I think you can tour it. I was looking at it, but according to this article, it's a Carlson Realty and a book publisher. So they say it's, you can't tour it, so I'm not sure which is true. Candles flying off shelves, and then so as far as who was doing it, there's another Corwin here, George Corwin. He was the sheriff at the time, or it could be Giles Corey, the guy that was pressed to death. So, and then there's also a female spirit, and men can leave with scratches on their chest.
Oof.
That sounds,
I gotta
this.
say, I mean, if I died by being pressed to death, I'd probably be pissed off for eternity and taking it out on people too.
Yeah, and one other thing about that, when he got pressed to death, I read that I don't know if it was the judge or the sheriff, they, to make sure he was dead, they stopped putting rocks on him when his tongue came out of his mouth. And
Oh,
then
God.
the guy, whoever it was, I don't recall, stuck his cane in his mouth and pushed the tongue back in.
That is just,
So if you're not mad for being pressed to death, that might do it.
oh, right? Insult to injury at
Yeah.
that point. Holy smokes. Now, for
Yeah.
the second one with the curse, was there any information on what led to him potentially being cursed?
You mean the Corwin curse with the dead children?
Yeah.
Well, he was the pre-trial judge of
Oh, okay.
Salem witch trial. I'll find it here. I got it. Okay. From 1684 to 1690, the witch house bore testimony to tragedy. Jonathan and Elizabeth Corwin had five new children, all died young. 9 weeks, 6 months, 19. Two additional deaths would occur by 1690. Third month, eighth week. They continued to inhabit the home until 1717. They were no longer the heads of household. It was, oh, okay, overseen by their son, George Corwin. So that's the George Corwin of the number one, the Joshua Ward House. He was the high sheriff. And he died early too, fever. And then his wife. So, you can see that there is a curse here. And I would just, I'm not sure if it's because of the death of the witches or what, but.
Yeah, man, that definitely be more than more than enough to qualify for being cursed, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Oof. Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, even with it, not being any crazy kind of specific haunted place, just I mean, obviously you've lived there and I have not, so I haven't been yet, but I feel like the whole place would just kind of have a vibe to it, just knowing, what did happen there. And just, I mean, does it, for a lot of people, does it just kind of like constantly hang over their heads? Or, when you get there and you live there and you're used to seeing things, does it just kind of like blend in?
Well, it's first of all, it's like it's probably bigger than you're thinking, and the haunted place where all the the stuff happened and is happening is downtown in this old district. Like like if you live in Salem, you just don't go downtown.
So it's not like
But
super immersive
oh, like I
everywhere.
lived across from the hospital, so like
Okay.
nobody. To the hospital, you know what I mean? Like it's not haunted, it's not old, but a couple miles, in the other direction, there's a lot of shops, the gift shops, the bookshops, the occult shops, like I bought a set of tarot cards there.
Oh, nice.
There's like haunted houses kind of thing, attractions, there's the wax museum and the Witch Museum. So there's all kinds of like, and I wouldn't call them A-list attractions either. They're kind of like a little bit cheesy, like they're not Disney World or probably Dollywood or whatever. They don't have the money or the funding for that, but it's more about the shopping. And then of course there's the real attractions where you can take a ghost tour and they'll take you through the cemetery, or you can see the witch memorial where people leave roses and stuff for Giles Corey, where he was for his memorial. Yeah, there's plenty of real stuff to go along with the commercialization. Yeah, and I should mention this, but there's a book that I bought for it, and I met the author at we have a great it's called the Merrimack Valley Halloween Book Festival. It happens like the second week of October every year. It's right here in my town. I live in Haverhill, Massachusetts, and it happens that I start writing horror and then I realize that we have this awesome book festival in our Haverhill Public Library, and I was invited to it this year and I got to sell some books. But
Oh,
we had
nice.
Jonathan Hands there, we had Josh Malerman. I mean, people come from all over to this thing, and it's pretty cool. So I met this guy. This author's name is J.W. Ocker, Ocker, and his book is called A Season with the Witch, and it's all about he moved to Salem with his family for the sole purpose of writing a book about it.
Wow.
And therefore, I can't remember how long, and I'm only about a quarter way through this, but it's good. He knows way more about Salem than I ever did. Anyway, if you want to know about Salem and what it's like to to visit, and of course, you know, Hocus Pocus, the movie, and you know, anything, all the you know, the celebrities that come to sign autographs and anything. It's all in here. Like, I know we're on a podcast here, but I'm just going to show Tasha here. Just like, here's the, I don't know if you can you see that? It's a picture of the Walgreens in front of the Proctor's Ledge. Can you see the corner of the Walgreens?
So
All right, sorry.
I figured you didn't
Know.
want to record with your camera on, so your camera's been off this whole time.
Oh, really? Oh, because I.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because I didn't say anything, because I was like, some people, you know, I've had a
Here
couple
we
people that
go.
were like, nah,
I'm like, can
not
you see
really.
that? Can you see
Oh,
me now?
so I
I
just wasn't gonna say anything, but
don't know. Oh, God. That's because I was naked. I didn't want you to see.
my gosh.
But anyway, just real quick, it's just a picture of like the corner of like where of the drive-through of a Walgreens in front of this hill covered with trees. And anyway, that's one of the pictures in this book. And
That still like blows my mind.
yeah.
It's such a crazy. It's like when you try to get I do it all the time. Like I love taking pictures of the sunrises and sunsets. So there's always that like perfect one that's filled with power lines and everything else
Yeah.
and just completely, you know, detracts from what you're trying to get a picture of. Like,
In
wow.
there. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Ridiculous. That's just
It's just this nondescript plot of land where it looks like a pile of trees and you can see rocks and, you know, but it's just overgrown because nobody knew what the hell it was.
That's
So they
crazy.
don't touch it. They put the thing in front of it, the memorial.
Oh man. And then to find out, you know, with a neighborhood right there, be like, oh yeah, by the way, I live right next to this.
Yeah, I know that would
Nightmare fuel.
I'd be looking out my window a little bit more.
It's like, I mean, I love taking road trips and stuff like that, and you know, driving through more remote areas, and you always see that house next to a cemetery, and you're like, what? I would go to bed every night being like, is this the night the zombie apocalypse happens? Just,
Yeah.
I'm gonna be ground zero. I better be ready for this because it's gonna be bad.
Do you are you familiar with Joshua Marcella, the author? Yeah, he wrote a book where he was living, you know, the main character likes to sleep in the cellar, and then but there's a graveyard next door. So
Oh,
he's like,
scratches.
yeah, so he's like level with the dead bodies. Yeah, not cool.
It's just such a, I feel like that'd be just such a weird feeling somewhere. I mean, I've lived in houses that definitely felt like there were, I mean, there were weird things going on, so it definitely felt like it there was something kind of there, but it's usually not so obvious as like a cemetery right here or something like that, where you kind of wonder like how much of this am I creating myself just because I expect there to be something.
Yeah, and the old houses are creepier, of course, too. Like, you know, they've got more noises and they're colder and whatever. Yeah, I lived in an older house too, and I'm glad I don't anymore.
And Journey, I love him to death. We had animals growing up. We had three different dogs from the time I was a kid to when I left home. We had cats, and I've never dealt with an animal that was so anxious as he is. I don't know, like when I got him, he was about a year and a half old, and he was definitely an outside dog, which blows my mind because he's so affectionate and so sweet. I don't know how he survived that long, but you know, he's just so, animals are more in tune with things than we are anyways.
Yeah.
So he is just that extra level of anxious. So every once in a while, when the wind blows really bad, the friend that I rent the house from, she's got a couple of hammock chairs that are on the wraparound porch, and they'll creak a little bit when the wind picks up. So, it'll be 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. And when he hears something like that, he doesn't just like get up and go sniff around the doors. He has a full on explosion and wakes me out of a sound sleep, sounding like he's about to eat somebody's face off and, jumping out of bed, panicking, not sure what's going on. And come to find out, he heard the swings creaking out there. And I'm like, I appreciate your commitment to this. However,
How long have you lived there? Like, has he has how long has he lived there?
so let's see, I have officially been in the house just over a year now, and I got him in March. So he's been here
Been
for a
months.
while, but I every once in a while, there's been a stray cat that'll kind of come up on the porch. And there's some possums in the neighborhood. So I know every once in a while, he'll hear something out there, because the next time I take him outside, he goes nuts sniffing
Yeah, maybe it's
everywhere.
not his place yet. I don't know. Like I have a timid dog too, and any you change anything on him, and he's sensitive and he doesn't like it. Change the routine or some noise or whatever. We went to a bed and breakfast in Vermont one time, and we brought him. It was a doggy hotel,
No.
and brought the bed and everything, and we set him up and shut out the light, go to bed. It's middle of nowhere. It's Vermont. I mean, it's like you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
And then we wake up in the morning and he's still sitting there, like just sitting up. Like we don't even think
No.
he slept.
Oh.
Yeah.
Little heart.
I know.
I was really surprised, because I took him, I drove to New York in July. He did great in the car. It was about a 12-hour drive to where my family is from here. He was great in the car. He would get a little anxious every time I stopped at a gas station. And thankfully, on the way up, I had my sister in the car with me, so that, we could lock the doors and leave the car running and everything. But he did really well for that. And then at my great grandma's house, I'm kind of in the city. By city, I mean like 20,000 people. It's not huge. But she is, out in the middle of nowhere. The noises you hear are deer crashing through the woods on the other side of the creek. And we slept outside in a tent, and he was great. He loved being up there, because he could just sit there and relax, and he was just kind of soaking it all in. And then we went to my dad's house for a few nights, and he did not like my dad's dog at all. He's super anxious around dogs that are closer to his size. He's fine with little ones, but of course he like bowls them over when he tries to play with them.
Yeah, you
So
said
it
he's like
was,
90 pounds or something,
yeah,
95.
he's about 92. He was 76 when I got him, and last time he was at the vet, he had finally filled out to about 92, because he was
Sad. He
skin
was
and
sad,
bone.
right?
Yeah. Oh, it hurts my
My
heart
dog too,
now.
same thing.
Looking at the before and after pictures, I'm like, oh, my baby.
Well, he's happy now.
So he's spoiled rotten, and he's living the good life. So
Good. Yeah.
doesn't get much better than that,
No. No, we
even
got the
though
same situation. Same exact situation.
I just love adopting. I had put it off for a while, and I was living in an apartment for 3 years before this, and then my friend got married and she didn't want to sell her house, so she was looking for someone to rent. And as soon as I moved in, she was like, you can get a dog now, you can have a dog, like, go get a dog. I'm like, no, the work schedule is unreliable, who knows. And she's like, go get a dog. So I had the evil pet finder app on my phone, and would scroll through and see who was up for adoption. And I wanted to find one that had been there for a little bit longer. He had been there, it was only 3 weeks, but it was just love at first sight. Like, I saw him and he just looked so pitiful in his pictures. And he's such a He's such a social dog that I know it must have absolutely been killing him being stuck, in a in the little area that they
Great.
have there.
Oh, yeah.
So I just
Sounds like my story. Same thing. Like we had to, coaxed up. Like he's a black lab, so he's in this crate, and it's dark in the crate. All I could see is eyeballs, and
No.
he just didn't want to come out. Like he was just beaten. He was 11 months old, and he was just done. Like
No.
I got the S end of the stick in life, and this sucks. And it's we've drawn him out of his shell, and it's very rewarding,
Oh yeah.
And
Yeah, it
my
was.
daughter worked for a shelter, and she's like, "Well, I found a
Oh.
good one because I thought like I want a mellow dog, because I work from home and whatever. I don't want to be playing
Yeah.
ball. I'm supposed to be, working." But yeah, long story short,
Yeah.
what a big part of our lives too.
So much. Absolutely. I don't know. As much as he drives me absolutely insane sometimes, I don't know what I'd do without him.
Yeah.
He's so smart, but he's such a dope and he just cracks me up. And for some reason now, like he's got this habit where he has to take a toy with him when he goes outside. So, he like when I let him out of his crate when I get home from work, he starts to take off, stops, grabs, his stuffed Mickey or his bear or his frog. He knows the difference between all of them. If I tell him to go get his frog or whatever, and then he goes and he sits in front of the door with his toy hanging out of his mouth, just waiting to be hooked up, and he drops it, does his business, comes back, picks it up, goes back inside.
Cute.
So it's just the fun little things they do that
Yeah. I
definitely make a
agree.
difference.
Well, they're part of the family.
Oh yeah. And then there's the nights where, there's nothing happening and he has a meltdown and runs into the kitchen like he's seen something or heard something. And I'm like,
Same
oh
thing. I'm telling you, we have the same thing. We're like, uh-oh, Bubba's weird today. His name's Bubba.
no.
And yeah, he's on today. He's off. Okay, well, just he's probably tired. Like they get tired, or I don't know. But like, yeah.
So terrifying. But it's also still an extra sense of security, like having him around. And like, I know you're going to scare the crap out of me at some point because I'm not going to be prepared for it and you're going to hear things, but good to know you're here. Come on, buddy. So, well, all right, sir. So you talked a little bit about your books. You said you've got another one that'll be coming out then April.
Yes, Hell on High from Bridget's Gate Press. It's
Oh, that's
I'll
right.
read you a little.
You were a Heather referral.
Yes,
Oh,
yes.
bless her. She sent me so many people. She's like, oh, wait, I have a couple more. Oh, wait, I have a couple more. Oh, I have someone else who might be interested. And I was like, just keep on sending them.
Yeah, they've got a good thing going, it seems, at Bridget's Gate. They're new, but when I talked to them, like we had like a Zoom meeting like this, and I was impressed, happy to be with them.
That's
But
awesome.
that my book comes out with them, through them, in April. I'm not sure the exact date yet, but it's my other three books were self-published, so this is new for me to be
Oh, okay.
going through somebody. And so far it's been great. I mean, just to have like a professional editor to go through it, MJ Pankey. Great to work with people and just have them give you like, hey, let's they want you to make it better, and it's very helpful.
That's,
So
I feel like that is the eternal struggle as an editor because I do freelance work on the side. And I feel like I can't convey enough to people. I've heard horror stories about some of the editors out there, so I totally get it. But, for me and a lot of the editors that I do interact with, like it's us being able to polish things. We're not here to like rip your baby apart. Like we are, trying to just kind of take that vision and that story just like tiny bit up to the next level and just polish it and make it shine and
yeah,
help you put out.
I never got like anything where even if I edit myself or whatever, it's like, oh, I got to do this. This is, you got to fix this. I'm like, oh, I didn't think of that. But it's never this major rewrite where you got to throw out, 20 pages, 100 pages, anything like that. It's usually like, let me just take a minute. I'll think my way around it. And boom, your book's better, by writing a sentence or two sometimes. Like I haven't had the situation yet, I guess, where it was like, nope, throw out half your book and do it this way.
I've heard some rough stories about stuff like that. But it's just like if you're gonna send an email off to somebody and you're like, hey, can you read this real quick? You know in your head what you want it to say. So, sometimes like when I have somebody else go through my work, it's like, oh, well, I thought I typed that word and apparently I didn't, but because they didn't have that expectation of what it was in their head, they caught it and I didn't. So, it's just fresh eyes and all that good stuff.
Exactly.
So
Yes. It's
I'm
more
always
than a
happy to
lot more
hear.
than typos. And like I love my mom, but when I give my book to my mom, she tells me where the typos are. She doesn't want to touch a thing, she doesn't want to change anything. I mean, I'm exaggerating. She has like, no, I think you need to do this once or twice. But it's mostly about typos. But working with MJ Pankey was more like, I don't know. It was more like she had as a gift as an editor, and I could see the difference, where my mom is reads for pleasure.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm always happy to hear when people have good experiences with editors, because I'm like, I promise we're not bad people. The
No,
dreaded editing.
I'm sure that it's just, for like a self-published person where they're not going to make a lot of money off the book unless they're maybe a book a month or something, then it's just it's a matter of cost because it ain't cheap to have good help. I mean, you get what you pay for.
That is
Yeah.
very true too. Fantastic. Well, I've got all your socials, and we'll have to sort out a second episode for New Hampshire stuff.
All right.
We'll definitely sort that out. I think I told you this will probably be like mid-February, but I'll give you a heads up when it's getting ready to come out. We'll get all that good stuff sorted out. And then you guys, like I said, you'll have to send me an ARC when that's getting ready to come out, and I can
Yeah.
knock out a review for you. And
Perfect. Yeah.
I've been trying to read people's work before, because almost everybody's been a horror writer that I've had
Yeah.
on. And I try to get to some of everybody's work before I interview them, but with doing, I stepped up when I started my book reviews. I was doing every other week, and then I was like, oh, this is easier than I thought. I'm gonna do one every week. And for the most part, it hasn't been too bad. But then I had COVID the end of August, and things got crazy with the holidays, and then I had the flu, and it got to be, I was like
That
scrambling.
schedule always gets filled up, doesn't
Oh my
it?
gosh.
Yeah.
So thankfully I'm off work the 6th through the 17th. So I'm about to like sit down and get caught up on things, try to get ahead on things, and just
Good for you.
get settled back into a comfortable spot with all the content and stuff. Figure out what I need to review when, because I've got a few other ones that are lined up for release next month. Which is, well, for us, it's February. For everybody listening, it's stuff that's coming out now. So, but no, I love it though. It's the best kind of crazy when it's stuff that you love and enjoy and all that. So I wouldn't
Yeah.
change it.
No.
Keeps me
If you're
sane.
finding if you find time for your second job or your hobby, like to that's what you really love to do. I mean,
Oh yeah.
maybe someday with God willing, it'll be the one job, the primary.
I'm trying so hard.
I've heard though that like once it becomes your primary job, then you lose a lot of the thrill of the fun. Like I'm always trying to get my first job done, so I haven't written in a few days, whatever, I want to get to it. But I've heard that when the first job goes away and then what you wanted to get to all that time is on the up next, it's kind of like, oh crap.
I can see that. I think that's why I want to take the lottery route. So that it doesn't have to necessarily
If
be
you
my
figure that
job.
out one, if you figure that one out, you let me know.
Every time I open my mailbox, I keep waiting for that letter for that incredibly wealthy relative that I don't know
Yeah.
who has passed and left everything to me in their will. I
No.
haven't gotten it yet, but I haven't lost hope. So
No.
we'll see. Only time will tell.
Right.
So, all right. Well, thanks again for coming on, sir. I definitely, as much as everybody hears about Salem, I really didn't know in terms of like specifics and stuff like that, different places.
Yeah, I didn't really either, and I'm glad you kind of you had me on, and now I'm gonna know a lot more when I go back.
Right? You got your whole list like planned out. You're good to go.
Yep.
Easy walking distance and all that plotted out.
Exactly. And
Fantastic. Well, you have a good rest of your night. Like I said, I'll give you a heads up when this is coming out, and we will definitely talk to you soon.
all right. Thank you, Tasha. I
Awesome.
appreciate it.
Thank you. You have a good night.